Bankless Nation, we have a special bonus episode for you today. We've got Vance Spencer on. We're going to talk about a question that I think has been in our minds, has been in the community's mind. Where are we right now? Mm-hmm. Is this a bull trap or a bull market? I can't tell. And there's debate on both sides. The bulls and the bears are hashing it out. Not sure if we've hit the bottom yet and are on the road to recovery, or if we've got more bottoms to hit ahead. So, David, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, so Ryan, I think we're going to try and answer your question. Are we ever going to get three digit ETH back? I mean, the Bankless listeners will know that I am just not, I don't think that's in the cards.
David doesn't buy it.
I don't buy it. But we're at an interesting inflection point in the market. Bitcoin is down 66% from the top, but up 50% from the bottom. Ether also down 66% from the top, but up 75% from the bottom. Solana down 90% currently, but is still up 200% from the bottom. Meanwhile, the L2 ecosystem is hot. OP token is at all-time highs. RPL is high in ETH terms. Aptos, somehow a $16 billion valuation. So where the hell are we in the market? Are we in a bear market? Is this a bull trap? Is macro going to send us a recession and this is the last time to lock in profits before we all die? I don't know. But I want to ask some of these questions to Vance and just overall get an audit of the market. And so that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, Vance Spencer, I think is somebody who has got a good sense of this. That's why he was the number one person who came into mind when we were asking this question of like, where are we in the market? So guys, before we get to Vance though, got to share some good news for you. It's tax news. It's crypto tax news. Look at this headline here.
If you do choose to sell, make sure you put this through the tax calculator.
All right. First of all, I got to say, this is from our friends and sponsors at Crypto Tax Calculator. And I absolutely love this tool for crypto taxes. Why? Because it saved so much time. All right. Look, David thinks I like doing taxes. I actually don't like doing taxes. Maybe it's because I talk about it a lot. But I'm very into tools that can help me do taxes more efficiently, and this is one of them. The headline here is sort out your tax nightmare. That's what it does.
Yeah.
Because Crypto Tax Calculator does the things that most other crypto tax software can't do, which is it gets the more complicated, complex transactions, right? You did something with an obscure DeFi protocol on Arbitrum Layer 2. You traded an NFT and you bridged it from, you know, one
whatever
place to
whatever.
Like in most tax software, that just gets lost. All they know to do is like to tap into an API and beam down your centralized exchange transactions. Crypto Tax Calculator gets the complex DeFi ones. So it's good for that. And it'll save you hours, maybe dozens of hours, maybe hundreds of hours, depending on how degen you were in the last year. But you got to absolutely check out this tool. And
David, but you also will save some money because Bankless listeners get 30% off with the code BANK30. And Bankless premium subscribers get 40% off with a code that is in our private Discord only for premium subscribers.
Click the link in the show notes, guys. Get your tax. Don't defer. Don't procrastinate. All right. David, what should we be looking for in this episode? You teed us up with a lot of questions in the intro here. Is any human being able to actually answer those questions? Are we asking too much of
Vance? Yeah, yes, and I hope and I think that he knows that. And so no human can read the market. We don't know if we're going up, down, left, or right. We're definitely not going to the left. We're definitely going to the right because that's how charts work. But I think listeners should really kind of pay attention to like, all right, how much risk is on the table in 2023? How much exposure do I want to have? And like, just think about positioning as we go into 2023. I think I'm a big fan of at the very least, 2023 will be volatile over the year. And so think about just how much risk do you feel like taking on this year?
Good for planning purposes. This episode is coming right at you. Before we get into it, first, we're going to tell you about the sponsors that will help you go bankless, including Kraken, which is our number one crypto exchange. It's the one we recommend for 2023. Let's get to it.
Kraken has been a leader in the crypto industry for the last 12 years. Dedicated to accelerating the global adoption of crypto, Kraken puts an emphasis on security, transparency, and client support, which is why over 9 million clients have come to love Kraken's products. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, the Kraken UX is simple, intuitive, and frictionless, making the Kraken app a great place for all to get involved and learn about crypto. For those with experience, the redesigned Kraken Pro app and web experience is completely customizable to your trading needs, integrating key trading features into one seamless interface. Kraken has a 24/7, 365 client support team that is globally recognized. Kraken support is available wherever, whenever you need them, by phone, chat, or email. And for all of you NFTers out there, the brand new Kraken NFT beta platform gives you the best NFT trading experience possible. Rarity rankings, no gas fees, and the ability to buy an NFT straight with cash. Does your crypto exchange prioritize its customers the way that Kraken does? And if not, sign up with Kraken at kraken.com/bankless. How many total airdrops have you gotten? This last bull market had a ton of them. Did you get them all? Maybe you missed one. So here's what you should do. Go to Earnify and plug in your Ethereum wallet, and Earnify will tell you if you have any unclaimed airdrops that you can get. And it also does POAPs and mintable NFTs. Any kind of money that your wallet can claim, Earnify will tell you about it. And you should probably do it now because some airdrops expire. And if you sign up for Earnify, they'll email you anytime one of your wallets has a new airdrop for it to make sure that you never lose an airdrop ever again. You can also upgrade to Earnify Premium to unlock access to airdrops that are beyond the basics and are able to set reminders for more wallets. And for just under $21 a month, it probably pays for itself with just one airdrop. So plug in your wallets at Earnify and see what you get. That's Earni.fi. And make sure you never lose another airdrop. Bankless Nation, Van Spencer is the co-founder of Framework Ventures, a VC firm that got its claim to fame by sticking around during the 2018 to 2020 bear market and going all in on DeFi before we even had the name DeFi, taking risks and finding gems while everyone else fled the industry. Vance, this is your fourth appearance on Bankless because in being addition to a VC chat, you are also adept at measuring the markets, understanding metas, which is what we are looking to do here today. Vance, welcome back to Bankless.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you guys.
Cheers. Always a good time, my man. And like we've been teasing in the intro and just now, we're really just kind of looking to get a lay of the land. Like, what is the meta right now? Because, like I said, we're kind of in this weird middle ground of being down bad, but up big from the bottom. So at just the highest of levels, when you look at the global read of the market, how are you feeling right now? Like, what's your vibe?
Feeling good. Pretty good vibe. I think we're just ranging. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think we need to like overly classify if it's an echo bubble or a bear market rally or if this is the start of a new bull run. Mm-hmm. We're just kind of ranging between 1 and 2,000 on ETH and, you know, 16,000 and about 25. Like the psychological level of where Three Arrows got liquidated and when FTX shut down, I think that's kind of the emotional high watermark of kind of like, you know, you need to clear that and put that behind you before you can really go anywhere. But we feel pretty good. We're kind of doing what we've always done, which is, you know, number one, stay alive. Number two, take advantage of opportunities in a market like that. And number three, you know, not get too worried about it because it's going to take a little bit and that's okay.
All right. So let's talk about this ranging idea, right? I do think we're probably ranging, but let's define what that means. So by ranging, do you mean we've already seen the bottoms? Do you think we go back down to the basement that we were in with triple digit ETH? God knows what was Bitcoin under 15K, Goblin Town, or have we seen the worst?
So the bottom was 888 in June for ETH. That's the main asset that I track. And you know, to be honest, when that weekend happened, that was like a weekend in June, I think. There was so much forced selling that weekend. It was BlockFi, it was Voyager, it was all the centralized lending desks trying to clear their book and reduce counterparty risk, and all the loans were getting called in. So people were selling crypto to return loans to these guys. You know, frankly, there's no credit left, and so that's not really going to happen again. We've blown up Terra, or they blew themselves up, FTX. You know, there's Genesis, there's Gemini, there's DCG, there's those, but those really aren't, you know, as big in my mind. And so I don't know if we go back to the bottom. A lot of it is just macro dependent. But you know, it was interesting to see ETH bottom in June and then all the tech stocks bottom in kind of the fall. You know, we were the first in and it looks like we might be the first out as well.
Yeah, that definitely tracks with the overall vibe of crypto always just being ahead of the game and moving faster and just being a faster canary in the coal mine. I think the thing that's been the most interesting to me is just looking about how the market has reacted to news. the news that Genesis indeed was going to go through bankruptcy. DCG is not in the hottest position. Yet the market pumped right after that news. As soon as the news that Genesis was going to go through bankruptcy, the market went up like a global like 20-30%. And so when the market like doesn't react badly to bad news, that starts to give me some sort of assurances that the worst is over. How do you feel about that take?
Anything can happen, right?
He Macro thinks it's a mid take, David. He doesn't think it's mid. A great take. Mid. He's trying to be polite
mid-take.
Here.
I don't think it's a mid take. I think, again, we're just in this range, and like, you know, if we're over 1400, it's the dawn of a new bull run. If we're under 1400, you know, the bottom might not be in. There's really no assurances or guarantees that you can get at these levels, but I don't look a lot at macro. I look at like a few basic indicators. One is, have interest rates peaked? And if you think about 2018, the 10-year peaked in November. The stock market bottomed in January, February, and crypto kind of rebottomed then as well. If you think a lot of this is driven by interest rates and liquidity, you know, we're over, or at least I think we're over that hill, which is really positive and supportive. But the macro is still kind of unknown. There's a lot of, you know, potential, black swan scenarios, call it. And so you really can't, you know, be too confident, but it just depends on how long your time horizon is. If you've got 5 or 10 years, or you know, in our case, up to 15, these prices we like, we've been buying, you know, this is kind of what we're built for. It's hard to take a short-term view on crypto. And you know, if you need guarantees about if the bottom is in and you only have a 6-month time horizon, I don't feel too badly for you if it doesn't work out, because you just need to have a longer term time perspective. It just is what it is. And, you know, I've been through this like 3 or 4 times now, and you just got to link.
I mean,
your
like, totally agree. Can we just say, like, look, if you're only planning to be in crypto and holding your positions for 6 months, get out. And I don't mean this in a mean way. It's just like, honestly, it's just like, you're going to lose money. It's kind of like, just like, save yourself. I mean, I've seen so many people blow up, including last year, one of the biggest freaking hedge funds in crypto blow up with short-term time horizons and over leverage. I think that's got to be a key message. So what you're saying, though, Vance, is that you think maybe interest rates have peaked, okay? But like, you're uncertain of other macro events. Maybe, again, they haven't peaked. I'm going back to, I know you were there, back to 2018, though. 2018 and 19, you know, the most painful part of that bear market for me wasn't actually hitting the bottoms. Although March 2020 was pretty damn painful. I was like, what's going to happen? But usually wasn't hitting the bottoms. It was this just long, this ranging period, this whole apathy period of like, nothing's happening. Like nothing's getting built. You know, will, like at that time, it was kind of existential. Are there any other apps on Ethereum that can exist here besides ICOs? And like, you know, this is the beginnings of DeFi, but it was so tiny that it really didn't matter. Are you worried about that kind of ranging, that sort of apathy period, this bear market? Or do you think this is not analogous to 2018, 2019?
The way I think of it is, do we need something new? Do we need new apps, new use cases, new things we haven't even thought of? Or do we need more of the same, more DeFi, more NFTs, more existing use cases? And during 2018, it was like new. It was, you know, we needed existentially something to use these blockchains for. Because if you went to the conferences back then, nobody was building anything. And you know, anything like, I remember Civic built a beer vending machine that used on-chain identity. And that was
this
like what
consensus 2018 or something?
This was, yeah.
I don't remember that. This was, I was, yeah, like, no, we hung our hat cool? on
for like
8 months.
It was, yeah, a real use case of a blockchain. So at that point, you needed like a whole industry. You needed everything to change. Right now, I mean, you look at ETH, it's at like 1,500. There's about 2,500, 3,000 ETH per day. You know, it's printing about 8 million in revenue per day. That's pretty good. Like, there's traction. You just need more of that. And if you get back into the cycle of people using NFTs and DeFi, and what that catalyzed by, frankly, is like the price of crypto assets going up, because with crypto assets, price has the ability to fix sentiment in ways that is not, you know, applicable in traditional equities. ETH is, you know, when ETH goes up in price, There's more credit because it's using DeFi. There's a bigger wealth effect because all the NFTs are priced in it. You know, there's all these things that are cultural. People send more ETH, people use more ETH. Like, you know, that is, you know, how the cycle bootstraps itself and it's reflexive. So we need more of that, more of the same. And we need, you know, a surprise. We need a game to work. We need, you know, we personally think it'll be games because they have the biggest consumer top of funnel, but it'll be a game. It'll be maybe something in the content space. It'll be something, maybe people are building real payment rails built on blockchains. Like, but the path is there. You know, I'm not like scratching my head trying to think of, you know, how we could use blockchains. Like, I know what they're useful for. It's just a matter of, can we get the flywheel to bootstrap itself? I think we can. At a certain ETH price threshold, it will. And then I think games will pan out. And so, like, I'm not really that worried, honestly. You know, it's just going to take a little bit, but I've got time.
Yeah, to talk about Ryan's apathy market, where we just go through 12, 16, 18 months of just like, oh, we range, and then we just realize that nothing's happened over that period of time. There are some things going on in the market which I'm conflicted about. Is this a short-term meta trade just because things like staking as a service tokens are in vogue in the moment and that's where attention is? Or is this something new that we need to pay attention to? So for example, like RPL is at all-time highs in Ether terms. Lido token is at its highs, I'm pretty sure, almost at its highs. Then layer two tokens, OP, is at all-time highs. The Arbitrum ecosystem is super hot. I know like some of these things can just be a short term, like a medium term trend, a medium term like narrative rotation trade, but they also could be like some of the foundations for what ultimately does emerge as a bull market, however long this ranging period takes on. So like when we watch these trends, again, staking as a service, layer twos, actually show up in market prices, how are you thinking about that in the short term? Are you like, okay, is this something to keep an eye on, or is this traders just going to trade?
So the things I look for are, number one, you know, you have a lot of price discovery in these smaller tokens, just cause you have like a lot of VC unlocks, you have like a lot of, liquidity farm tokens that are coming out, you know, so on and so forth. There's a lot of ability for people to find the right price for these things. And you have all of the teams unlocking as well, if they hadn't through the bull market. And so it's actually very healthy that you're seeing a lot of volatility and you're seeing a lot of dispersion as well between tokens that have a lot of revenue and those that don't. And, you know, you've seen that in the price movement of things like Lido and Rocket Pool. And I think that's very healthy. And so it's worth paying attention to that stuff because those will tell you kind of where the crypto native bid really is. You know, it's really at this point, it's hedge funds, it's retail, and it's a small smattering of institutions that are buying the majors. But, you know, the signals you get from the crypto natives, what they're willing to trade their stables for in a time, you know, of a pretty deep bear market, that's a pretty good signal for what might be the next meta or the next narrative. The other thing that I think of and just look for is, you know, does fully diluted valuation match circulating valuation? It's hard for me to make a judgment call on things that have like 10% circulating just because you're playing this weird low float, you know, game. And you know, like, is that the right price? Is that the wrong price? It just depends on, you know, what the supply of unlocks is going to be in the future. And, you know, it's really hard to forecast that, especially if you're thinking about who sells and who doesn't. And then the final thing that I look for is, you know, which tokens are going to break their all-time high first, where circulating matches fully diluted. And that is usually a pretty good indicator of where things go next. And nobody's really gotten there yet, but, you know, some are close. You look at Lido, you look at things like Matic, you look at things like, you know, even ETH is pretty close. Like whichever ones break first, you know, that usually has a chance of becoming the next meta.
Vance, while we're on the subject here, and you kind of mentioned it briefly, is crypto natives are kind of buying, like look at what they're doing. And you said some institutions are buying. I want to talk to you about institutions for a minute. Do you remember this was another mantra coming out of 2017? It's like the institutions are coming. It was a Novogratz thing. I'm surprised he didn't get that one tattooed. Got something else though. But so sorry, Novo. Sincerely sorry. But okay, so what about the institutions then? Are they freaking? We don't talk to them as much. I mean, we probably should from time to time. Actually, we're having Eric Peters on, I think, next month, David, mm-hmm. the podcast. I intend to ask him this question. But what's your vantage point? Are the institutions like scared shitless about 2022? I mean, you had Algo stablecoins go to zero. You had major institutionally safe hedge fund Theros Capital collapse. You had the number three exchange, maybe number two exchange. I don't know what this is. Suddenly they're missing $15 billion. Oopsies. Like, are the institutions freaking out about this and heading for the hills? Is that going to cause a bear market, like, or extend it? What do you think about institutional buyers?
So this was the real, really the first cycle we had institutions, and that's lost on some people. The 2017 wave was basically just ICO capital and crypto natives punting around, and it was very Bitcoin heavy. This was the first cycle where the institutions really got in, the blockchain fund of funds got really big. You know, everyone got pulled up on the institutional side. I think the problem with the institutional side is that a lot of people were sold a very specific dream of crypto, which was FTX, which was GBTC, which was putting Bitcoin on, you know, S&P 500 balance sheets, which was the NFT and metaverse wave. And everyone who fought to allocate at these crypto institutions now just looks kind of stupid. But it's not just a crypto thing. It's all the fake meat companies, you know, that are down 99%. It's, you know, FaZe Clan stock, which is down 99%. It's all the car makers, which were fraudulent. It's all the growth stock funds that have gotten beaten up. It's not just crypto.
It's just the memes. It's the narrative stocks and right, memes.
And so, like, whenever you think about, you know, what might the institutions be thinking, think individually. Think about a 32-year-old analyst or associate who's trying to make it to partner, who, you know, put their neck on the table to fight for allocation into FTX and now just got completely buckled and is trying to figure out what they do next.
Ooh.
Probably isn't going to be launching another headlong into crypto strategy or fund or allocation. Those things are just going to take time for people to recover from. I think the good news is that Robinhood, you know, the growth tech stocks, the fake meat, you know, companies, those just don't have any tailwinds. Like, they probably may, they might not ever hit their all-time highs again. Like, there is just no structural momentum behind them. If you think about what I said earlier, where, you know, crypto was the first into the toilet and maybe it's the first out, the reason is because it has a bunch of progress. It has a bunch of applications. It has cash flows. You can, you know, value it, you know, in a reasonable manner. And a lot of these other things don't. You know, Robinhood, no matter how hard, how big it gets, a payment for order flow business model means that it's really never going to generate a ton of capital at scale. And so I think it's going to take time. The institutions aren't all gone. It's just, you know, some made unfortunate decisions to allocate into funds or, you know, investment opportunities that didn't pan out, but that's just kind of how it goes. And it's unfortunate that there isn't any continuity, you know, of someone who's just like the crypto guy at, you know, like one of the big endowments. Because, you know, that way it would be better. They would allocate during the bear market. They would not just come back and buy the top, kind of like they always do. But, you know, that's just life. You know, they just have pretty bad timing pretty much across every cycle.
All right. So I get that argument. I just want to advance, take the devil's argument case for a second. Okay. The fake meat companies and the meme stocks and et cetera. Yeah, they're down bad too. All right. But they didn't have a, you know, $10 to $15 billion fraud who bribed one third of all Congress that literally kind of went bankrupt. The biggest fraud scandal, whatever we're calling this thing now, since Enron. Does that cause a permanent stain on our industry in ways that maybe the other mistakes that were made during the like cheap money era haven't? What do you think about that argument?
I think, first of all, you know, Nikola founder Trevor Milton, he's in jail. You know, Chamath launched, I think, 20 SPACs that have all pretty much gone down 95%. There's a fair, you know, amount of blame to be passed around when we're thinking about 2021 and what exactly happened. SBF is the biggest fraud of them all. He has funny hair and he looks strange. And so people like to write headlines about him and all the strange things that he does. And, you know, that's just like something that we're going to have to collectively live through throughout the case. And that's happening in October. So it's not going away anytime soon. But, you know, everyone right now is just shocked, or I think they're coming out of the shock. They're probably, like, you know, dealing with it now. But in the fullness of time, I think people will realize that crypto has real use cases, has real traction at scale. Many of these other more speculative companies and projects and ideas did not. And conflating them is just a stupid idea, because that's how you get sidelined. And so I think right now, if you're describing the institutional LPs, you need to be very honest about It's not like this metaverse future that's like 50 or 100 years away. We have traction now. DeFi is better, faster, cheaper. Games have a structural advantage if they're built on blockchain rails. There's many other interesting things that are happening that are generating cash flow. You know, you just have to lead them back to water, but that's okay. This kind of has happened for the past two or three cycles. So it's not really anything new to me, at least.
I think this is just a great sober analysis of like positioning crypto, the crypto markets, relatively shoulder to shoulder with some other like frontier technologies that are coming out and saying, hey, like we had a fraud, but like there's other frauds too. And now our frauds are shoulder to shoulder with their frauds. And so like this is all just the way that finance works. And I do appreciate the take that at least in comparison to like, you know, the plant meat technology, crypto rate of innovation is still probably the fastest there is on the planet. Probably. Like our iterative cycles and our innovation that we can get inside of a bear market is unprecedented. And Vance, you talked about just like the difference between fully diluted valuation and market cap and being able to build our way. I think my interpretation of what you're saying is like, well, even when our valuations might get ahead of us, we can still build our way back up to those valuations. But I want to put on the screen here, the Aptos chart, which is currently standing at a $16 billion network valuation. Yeah, that fully diluted $16 billion network valuation. Absolute mooning in price at all-time highs. When you see the Aptos chart, what do you see? Oh, sorry to the stream because the visuals didn't make it up there. Sorry about that. But same question.
I'm a realist. I just know that it doesn't have any apps built on it. There's no ecosystem. There's no network. And frankly, like I think it's a little embarrassing. But you know, like I'm not the judge, jury, and executioner of like what gets to go up in price. And me just being, you know, I think the non-charitable version would be salty about this. You know, I think I could see how people would arrive at that conclusion, but I don't know. There's always going to be the speculative excesses of crypto. To see it like totally dominate a market cycle and pull away from things that have traction, I think we just need to get past that at some point. And so,
does that? Like, let me. Can I ask you? So, you know, some of our friends, some of the people David and I associate with, and kind of that chart that we just showed really triggers them. Like it makes them angry.
It makes
them angry. It pisses them off. In ways that maybe aren't entirely mentally healthy. But like, I also feel that. I mean, like, if you have a blockchain without traction, without use cases, without selling the thing that blockchains sell, which is block space, and it's valued at, I mean, isn't that what we just went through in 2022? Does it make you mad at all? Does it piss you off? Or are you just like kind of zen about it? Like, whatever. I mean, the long-term like future will bear out however it does, and the short-term kind of things don't matter. How do you feel about these things?
Have to take a long view. You know, most of these things eventually correct to the point that they should be valued at, but all blockchain assets trade expensive. That's the reality of the situation, and they trade expensive because, you know, we at least think that we're building into this massive addressable market that we should be able to capture in the near future. But like it works for us and it works against us. You know, ETH is $160-170 billion asset right now. That's expensive. That's bigger than most software companies. It's about the size of Salesforce.com. I think it's, you know, pretty cheap. We've certainly, you know, expressed that position in our book, but you know, if you comped it to a traditional software company, I could see those investors being like, how could it trade so high? This is complete bullshit, whatever. And so it's a feature and a bug. You can't have Aptos trade that high without Ethereum being there. Sure, I think the ratio corrects at some point, but I've never really been able to figure it out. But, you know, like,
so you guys,
most of these blockchains were multi-billion dollar valuations of the like the long tail L1s, and it just happens. You know, it just is what it is.
Well, XRP still hasn't gone to zero. Of course, it's worth still billions, although they haven't hit an all-time high in over 5 years, which is kind of interesting, whereas, you know, ETH was in the last 400 days or so. But I guess, you know, my understanding of framework and how you've positioned yourself, this could be totally wrong. I'm not an LP. I don't have the inside scoop. But you guys probably missed a lot of the quote-unquote alt L1 trade of 2021. In 2022, early 2022, at least. I don't know if that'd be fair to say. Certainly, like, I did, and a lot of people in the Bankless community did, and to the point where it felt like I was almost taking like crazy pills. If I go rewind January of this year, things were much, much different. And we had Luna mooning. And if you'd say anything bad or like contrary to sort of the narrative against any of these kind of alt one trades, it could be something simple as like, I don't think this is worth what the market thinks it is right now. Something like that. You get absolutely pummeled to the point where I felt like I was a little crazy. What was the effect on you? Like having maybe, I don't know if this was your position too, missed some of these alt one trades. Did you think that you were like wrong for a period of time? And how do you kind of deal with that? Explore that with us.
Yeah, I mean, my job isn't to hit everything. It's to hit enough and be unique enough that, you know, I produce a portfolio that has really good returns and doesn't look like my competitors. And, you know, we didn't hit the alt L1 trade. You know, we were really kind of in the DeFi and now gaming, kind of those types of investments. You know, frankly, like in the fullness of time, our portfolio did better than if we had allocated to those at the time when the fund could have allocated to them. So I really wasn't that worried. I think more of it in terms of like, what should I learn for the future? You know, are the learnings that I should be aping into every alt L1 that I see and hoping that it, you know, goes to $16 billion fully diluted and sell into retail? I don't really think that's the learning. We've had a lot of opportunities to chase fast money, but we've really never taken them. We take a long-term view, which means protecting the brand and trying to do things that we think have real product market fit and traction. And so we're happy to kind of, you know, let our theses play out and be proven wrong or right in the fullness of time. But I don't think the learning for me was, you know, allocate to all the LL1s. I think the learning was a lot of them were probably pumped up by cheap credit and probably customer money. There was a massive, you know, overinflating of, you know, what they thought the fundamentals were. And, you know, if I look back and it, also if I look forward, I can tell which ones are generating a lot of revenue. I can tell which ones, you know, are actually going to be attractive to institutions. And I can tell which ones are frankly going to be the future of the industry. I think eventually we're going to see these more speculative alt L1s, tokens, et cetera, die. And we've already seen a lot of that so far. And I think generally the market is tending towards my perspective rather than the opposite one. And yeah, you also have to remember that back in the day, ETH had not transitioned proof of stake. EIP 155 was not in. It had not scaled. All three things of those were the main motivating factors to launch these L1s. And frankly, like those aren't there anymore. So let's see. And you know, if you have something like Eigenlayer where you can use ETH to secure your Oracle blockchain or middleware, why launch more with tokens? It doesn't make a ton of sense.
There's a couple more sectors of this conversation that we want to touch on, Vance. The state of the private markets is something that I want to pick your brain on. But also, I know that you of course, pay attention to macro, because how can you not? And there's just always this looming fear of recession on the horizon. So I want to ask you about those two things. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Uniswap is the largest on-chain marketplace for self-custody digital assets. Uniswap is, of course, a decentralized exchange, but you know this because you've been listening to Bankless. But did you know that the Uniswap web app has a shiny new fiat on-ramp? Now you can go directly from fiat in your bank to tokens in DeFi inside of Uniswap. Not only that, but Polygon, Arbitrum, and Optimism layer 2s are supported right out of the gate. But that's just DeFi. Uniswap is also an NFT aggregator, letting you find more listings for the best prices across the NFT world. With Uniswap, you can sweep floors on multiple NFTs, and Uniswap's universal router will optimize your gas fees for you. Uniswap is making it as easy as possible to go from bank account to bankless assets across Ethereum, and we couldn't be more thankful for having them as a sponsor. So go to app.uniswap.org today to buy, sell, or swap tokens and NFTs. Arbitrum One is pioneering the world of secure Ethereum scalability and is continuing to accelerate the Web3 landscape. Hundreds of projects have already deployed on Arbitrum One, producing flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystems. With the recent addition of Arbitrum Nova, gaming and social dApps like Reddit are also now calling Arbitrum home. Both Arbitrum One and Nova leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. On Arbitrum, both builders and users will experience faster transaction speeds with significantly lower gas fees. With Arbitrum's recent migration to Arbitrum Nitro, it's also now 10 times faster than before. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first dApp. With Arbitrum, experience Web3 development the way it was meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. All right, Bankless Nation, we are back with Vance Spencer. And Vance, of course, like I said in your bio, co-founder of Framework Ventures, hence venture capital, hence private markets. The private markets have been volatile just as much as the public markets because they were super overinflated a little bit over a year ago and now have come down quite a lot. At least that's been what I've been seeing. Vance, can you give us an audit of just like the state of the private markets? So like how are the supply of deals? How are the valuations of those deals? Is Framework writing a bunch of checks right now? Like what's overall going on from your neck of the woods?
We're still deploying. We announced an investment today. We announced another investment last week. So like we're certainly doing things. I think things have just gotten a lot more grounded, lower prices, more of a focus on revenue, more of a focus on, you know, what addressable market are you tackling today versus, you know, what market do you need to invent tomorrow? And, you know, at the C level, which is kind of where we play, not a lot has changed. Like, you know, things have gone down in price quite significantly, but other than that, we're still seeing a lot of flow, a lot of entrepreneurs, et cetera, et cetera. I think where things have changed the most are at the growth stage. You had OpenSea at $13.3 billion valuation. You had Alchemy at 12. You had Circle at 9. You know, Coinbase is worth $12 billion right now. So re-rate everything to that, and you probably get a valuation for those startups of a few billion, you know, if you're being charitable. And that
Aptos is worth more than Coinbase right now?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay. You know, well, keep in mind, like, you know, Coinbase doesn't have the same concept of like fully diluted and circulating supply. So it can't really like play those types of games.
Sure.
And so, you know, the value of Aptos, who knows what it actually is? It can't be determined, but things have come down quite a lot. We still are waiting for like the class of 2021 to come back and raise because they're going to need to. But there's a lot of startups out there. And the reality of the game is that it takes 1,000 startups to produce one that's good, or 10, you know, more charitably. And we're just seeing that process play out in real time. But we're getting to the 10. Like, it feels like we know where they're going to be and what the names might be. And that feels good.
Vance, your framework has really leaned into the whole gaming side of things. But from what I've seen on Reddit, gamers hate NFTs. So how are you fighting that fight?
So Web3 games are uniquely positioned to offend both existing gamers and crypto people. Crypto people don't think it's fully decentralized. Gaming people don't think it's a real game. And so like, who's going to play it? The answer is a lot of people. Like, there are tens of thousands of people trying Alluvium, playing, you know, it's not even connected to NFTs yet, but like the game is compelling. There's a community forming around it. And it's very crypto native and it can scale. You know, on the Web2 side of the Web2 studios that are coming in, you know, Stardust has 80 customers right now that are building on top of it that are, you know, not going to do the full token feedback loop, you know, reflexive Axie game, but they're going to put NFTs as shields or swords, or, you know, the virtual currency will be tokens. Like, we're making baby steps. And so I don't really expect to get a lot of love from really the crypto people or the gaming people. We're just going to create a new market. But the good news is I'm being proven right at a small scale. Like, things like Pixels, which is another game on Stardust, has 40, 50,000 monthly active users. They're scaling. It's growing. It's one of the larger blockchain apps on a blockchain. You know, these things are already happening. I just am waiting for it to get from smaller scale to larger scale. And then I'll be able to say that, you know, I was definitively right. But that's a this year story.
David, I'm curious. Have you heard crypto people like hate on crypto games for not being decentralized enough? I'm wondering where that's coming from.
Usually it's it's just a Ponzi scheme with a skin layer on top of it is the typical critique that I hear.
Yeah. Or it's not a real on-chain game. Sure. You know, not all of the game is on-chain. It's like, why would we want to put all the game on-chain? We're not trying to build like the most on-chain game. We're trying to build a game that appeals to people that
I definitely don't hate it.
Vance, if the Vance Spencer, the framework thesis for crypto gaming is 100% correct, can you kind of give us what that looks like over the next 1 to 5 years? Like how do games progress under your vision for crypto gaming?
It'll feel like when NFTs first became popular, when all the DeFi people were like having fun, they thought they were inventing the future, it was going to be dominated by DeFi, and then NFTs started happening and people were like, that's not right. Those are dumb. Those are just JPEGs and monkeys. And you know, that doesn't involve DeFi. And so like, how could we be left out of
that?
Like,
was totally me at first.
100%. Yeah.
For like two or three months.
It happens. And you know, then the NFT people got rich and it was like, these people, like, how could they do
that? No taste.
Apes. You know,
no respect for the elders.
You know, first of all, it's happening in the background. Nobody realizes that people are playing things like Luvium or playing things like Pixels, or you know, like a lot of these games are starting to ship their first iteration. And you're going to have a couple of days where it just feels like Steppen did, where that was like all anybody was doing for like a week. And you're like, how do I buy the shoes? And like, should I be doing this? Like, this is stupid. And like, it's only popular for people in other countries, so I'm not going to do it. It'll feel like that. And it'll happen a few times. And then you'll see the burn on ETH or an L2. And that's when it's going to become real for people. And what you're going to see is that it won't look like the exact same stack. Some of the wallets will be custodial. You know, that'll offend a lot of people. The whole game won't be on chain. You know, that will offend a lot of people. But it'll bring a lot of new people on the crypto blockchain rails, just like the Reddit point system did. And that's what I'm looking for. More people.
Vance, DeFi has been kind of down only for a while now. Feels like 2 years. Maybe it has been 2 years. I mean, there have been sectors, there have been tokens that have gone up. But overall, down relative to ETH, certainly. Is it going to make a comeback at any point in time? I mean, like, some people are just pointing to you now, broken tokens, broken token economics, no, like, bad governance systems, no actual revenue profit attached to the token itself. What do you see the future of DeFi tokens, even some of the blue chip ones, which I know you're kind of like, you're fundamentally bullish on some of the original DeFi types of applications like trading and lending and these types of things. But what about the tokens?
So I think a lot of the DeFi use cases are leveraged to the price of the major assets. And so, you know, that's a category where you just need more of the same. You know, you need more speculative interest in crypto. You need more people using ETH as credit. You need more people buying NFTs. You know, those are all DeFi use cases. And those are all largely driven by the price of crypto assets. And so, you know, there is a point where that flywheel gets stronger and stronger. It's above a price point where we are today, in my opinion. But, you know, that's kind of the bull case for DeFi. It's the most endogenous use case that's on chain. You don't need to invent anything new. We know it has product market fit. And we know how the tokens can accrue revenue. There are a lot of broken tokens, but those are more of a symptom of not having product market fit at scale versus like not being able to hand the revenue over to token holders. So that's kind of like one point on DeFi. But you see, you know, even in this market, success stories, the new number one app on DeFi is Lido. It is adding, you know, as of yesterday, 65,000 ETH per day staked through Lido. That is a lot of ETH. That is a lot of money. There's a lot of fees that can be redirected to the token. So, you know, people choose to see the thousands of tokens that didn't work instead of the 100 or so that did. But we're not in the business of the 1,000 tokens. We're in the business of picking the winners. And, you know, it just is what it is. Nobody said this is going to be easy. But there are signs of traction. There are signs of life there. And yeah, you know, it's all good. We just hold for longer. That's my opinion.
Holding for longer has been a facetiously optimistic or good strategy for me. It was like, oh, I'm down. I'll just keep on holding. And I mean, a lot that were really, really worked with Ether. I don't know how going down the long tail of tokens, how much that works out. But I mean, it's worked out prior to this. And so, Vance, there's one last line of questioning that I want to talk about, which is just macro and recession. I do know you pay attention to macro. I also know that you won't ever give prescriptive advice because you're not so foolish to do so. But as it relates to just how you think about things and things in 2023 and beyond and what other people should be thinking about as it relates to macro, what are you thinking about? Because the banks are laying off people. People are talking about that's a canary in the coal mine. Tech has had massive rounds of layoffs. What are the first thoughts that come to mind when you hear the word macro and recession?
I've heard it all before. I would say that's probably my first one. I've listened to all the macro podcasts. I've heard all the takes. They're all, you know, reasonable. Earnings might go down. The recession might be bad. You know, there's a lot of evidence which suggests usually stocks bottom before the economy actually does, just because you have people cutting rates and doing things like that. But you know, I don't find any of the like macro doomer predictions too compelling. There's a lot of people, smart people, who thought the world was going to end last year, that oil was going to 300, you know, and we were going to be trading like sticks of butter for like wood. But that just didn't come to pass. And, you know, I think now with interest rates, you know, hopefully having peaked, we're on the other side of a market that's driven by liquidity and interest rates. And that's how I think about macro. I don't really pay attention to it too much. Yeah, I mean, macro doesn't need to be super favorable. It just needs to be like not entirely hostile. That's at least my framework.
Ryan, you want to bring up the ratio?
Oh, I thought you wanted to bring up the ratio.
I'll bring up the ratio. Okay, this is the last subject, and then we'll let you go, Vance, because I know you got a meeting. But this is the thing that I've been keeping an eye on for a while now, which is, of course, the Bitcoin-Ether ratio that I've now put up on the screen. I think this is one of the most highest signal charts in crypto. To me, it's the sign of health. Maybe I'm biased, but when Ether goes up,
I think
versus,
you are biased, sir.
biased. When Ether goes up versus Bitcoin, I think that's kind of healthy. And ever since EIP 1559 and proof of stake, we've seen a general like uptrend in the ratio, except for the last 2 days. Vance, when you see the ratio, what kind of signals do you think it tells us?
I mean, right now, if you zoom out, like it's we've just come out of this massive years-long downtrend, and it's now kind of reestablished itself at a higher level. The way I think of it is, if you're bullish, EIP 1559, the merge, you know, all the flows and the structural, you know, basically supply of Ethereum, that will matter on the ETH USD pair. But really, what I look for is, you know, can all of these factors drive ETH to flip Bitcoin? And I think the answer is probably yes. And then once ETH does that, you know, ETH USD will be in charge of its own destiny. So, you know, that's kind of how I think about it. I really don't follow this chart other than like very long-term time horizons, but I think it looks pretty healthy.
ETH flipping Bitcoin, do you dare to provide a time frame on that one?
I don't. You know, it could take years, could be sooner than that, but the math is pretty clear. And when you have the math on your side, in terms of the supply of these assets, just think of it like, you know, you mix a bunch of elements together, the lightest ones are going to generally float to the surface. Doesn't really make sense for the heaviest one to be on top, especially when that's getting sold in the market and the miners are down bad. So that's kind of how I think about it.
And really, just to drive home on that metaphor, light versus heavy, can you unpack that real quick?
Sure. So, I mean, the lightest assets should float to the top. You know, think about like mixing a salad dressing together. Mm-hmm. You know, you generally see the oil float to the top.
Right, but why is Ether light and why is Bitcoin heavy?
Bitcoin is heavy because it has, I believe, about 350,000 Bitcoins printed per year. And at a current cost of, you know, 22,000-23,000, that's like 7-8 billion of selling pressure that needs to be absorbed somewhere. So call it 500 to 800 million per month of buyers that you need to go find versus ETH, which has zero supply being issued and you don't need to find those buyers. And this may sound small for a market that has billions and billions of dollars per day, but not having the persona of people who are coming in and selling these coins every single day, every single month is actually a very big thing. If you've spent any time looking at order books, just like all of the pricing is set on the margin, the most consistent buyers, the most consistent sellers, and one asset having them, whereas the other doesn't, It's just a massive difference. And so it's heavier. It's also bigger in the aggregate. You need more buyers anyway to keep it up there. And so those factors, I think, will weigh on it, and we'll see what happens.
Michael Saylor can do it. I think. $7-8 billion.
I expect him to announce something at some point. Just feels like, you know, he's been out there maybe buying a few coins.
So Vance, it's not a matter of when, it's just a matter of if for Ether flipping Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're bullish on crypto, you're pretty much bullish on that ratio. Because if the industry just stays how it has been in the past, what are we just going to be doing Bitcoin again? Like that doesn't really hold my attention, at least.
Well, what about this question though? Do you think that the alt layer one wars are over? I mean, so every bull market we've had kind of a round of new contenders coming after Ethereum's throne. Will that happen again?
Yeah, of course. There's a market for being early to stuff. You know, people want to be the next ETH killer. That'll always persist. Even when Eigenlayer launches and you never, ever need to have your own token, and like, we'll find a reason for one. Because there's product market fit to being early for things, and there's product market fit for entrepreneurs launching tokens. And so you need to just be cognizant of, like, you're going to have things like Aptos happen every
But will quarter. You get fewer? Like, I'm wondering if, like, the investment opportunities move up the stack a little bit, like,
you will get fewer. You will get fewer, but you know, ETH will, and it is still like the biggest venture outcome that people can target.
Right.
And so, you know, people aren't launching a lot of DeFi protocols right now because they don't think the opportunity is there. It's the opportunity is 100x larger to launch a base layer if you can become the size of Ethereum.
Still, it's still.
Yeah, it's gonna be like that for
a
while. Jeez.
Yeah. You know, it is what it is, but no need to be upset.
I like this Zen attitude Vance has towards these markets. Do you have any other thoughts for us? Any kind of advice? So what should we expect in 2023? What should we get busy doing? Or not?
No advice of any sort. don't leave. Read. Try to stay involved. Try to, you know, support entrepreneurs. It'll take longer than you think, but it'll kind of happen sooner than you expect. You know, it'll happen all at once. So I would just say enjoy the time where it's not super crazy and you can afford to take a beat.
Are there still 100x opportunities out there somewhere sitting in the square market?
That question.
I hope they are. David, do you have anything else for Vance before we close this thing out?
No, that's it. Vance, thank you so much for coming on and just sharing your thoughts. I think everyone just got a little bit wiser on the stream.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Got to remind everyone, of course, none of what we just talked about was financial advice. Purely entertainment. It always is on Bankless. Risks and disclaimers. Got to let you know as well. Crypto is risky. If you didn't know, now you know. So is DeFi. You could lose what you put in. We're headed west, though. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.